Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios in El Paso, Texas. If you want to call in tonight, the number is 267-521-0159. Now, I was going to continue with my discussion of Secrets of the Dead, but first, I want to get something off my chest. Now, I'm 100% disabled veteran, and I'm proud of having served in the military. And Texas, in its infinite wisdom, has decided that 100% disabled veterans don't pay property taxes. But non-veteran officials view that as losing money. And I've discovered that we are treated as second-class citizens. We hired a roofer who was absolutely incompetent. The house leaks like a sieve. It's infested with mold, which is a definite health hazard. The city of El Paso has an ordinance that contractors, and roofers are considered contractors, are to post liability insurance so that if there's a problem, there's an insurance company that can step in and fix the issue. Well, after I finally got the city to reveal to me who the insurance carrier was, I tried to get the insurance carrier to step up. But they wouldn't, because unless the roofer filed a claim, they said they didn't have to get involved. And the roofer basically said, "Screw you, I'm out of here." Now, that mold infestation is throughout the house. I now have pulmonary disease and scarring of the lungs caused by the mold. My wife has kidney damage. The roofers think it's funny. I went to the city and I said, "You have an ordinance. Why aren't you enforcing it?" "Oh, they're wonderful people. They take us out to lunch all the time. Why would we want to do something to harm them?" "And they pay property taxes. You don't." This thing has been going on for 5 years. My attorney, a good friend, going to do so many wonderful things. was offered a judgeship if he would drop the case. Not a bribe, of course, but a recognition of his brilliant work. Of course, he didn't tell anybody that all that brilliant work they've talked about, I wrote. They also weren't aware that in my misspent youth, I was an attorney myself until I told a judge I wasn't going to screw my clients at his request. So, my house is falling apart, my wife and I are sick, and the city says, so what? Now, to make it even worse, my homeowner's insurance company, the company that stands behind you, walked away because it was becoming too expensive to fix this house, to remove the mold, and to fix all the damage caused by the roofers. As of last year, $178,000. Because it has to be stripped to the studs, all the insulation taken out, and the mold remediated. And that company that stands by you, Liberty Mutual, ran so fast. If it hadn't been so serious, it would have been funny. And when I started asking questions of the Texas Department of Insurance, they're a wonderful company. They wouldn't do anything wrong. Well, let me tell you about that wonderful company. When we were insured with them 20 years ago, it was a multi-billion dollar company. In 2000, they formed Liberty Lloyds of Texas, a smaller company worth about $7 million. Now, why would they do that? Well, number one, it reduced the size of the risk pool that let them raise the rates. And if you sued them, all that was at risk was $7 million. They abandoned us. They have a law firm out of Austin who asked that there were two insurance companies involved in the suit. The roofers sued us because they didn't manage to soak us for everything they wanted. And they had a little scam going. They had a friendly attorney who, on contingent, would sue for $10,000, for example, offer to settle for $5,000 and split it with them. And they knew, since I had all this free money coming from the VA, that I'd be more than happy to shovel out the money. Well, the mere fact they had destroyed my house, I wasn't exactly in the shoveling mood. And the attorney working with them worked for a firm that had represented me for almost 25 years. So when I went to the bar, he cut and run, which left them, and anybody in their right mind would have said, well, insurance company, come in and settle this. No. They stood in my front yard and said they'd rather go bankrupt than pay one dime. So what if they screwed up? I had all this free money. I could go get somebody else to do it. So for 5 years, we've been involved in this suit. The judge apparently, see, one thing I noticed in law school, they go out of their way to tell female attorneys that they're God's gift to the world. And the female attorney that's representing Liberty, she walks in and she just takes over and the judge lets her do it. In fact, I think he's scared of her. She lifts her finger. What can he do for her? And she certainly had my former attorney buffaloed. Well, I'm kind of like Ulysses S. Grant. It's too much effort to run. Stand your ground and fight. And when she did the depositions, she was so concerned about who I might have told about the screw job that Liberty's doing not only to me, but to every person they've insured in the state of Texas. So I made arrangements. I'm a special correspondent for Fox, and I'm making arrangements to appear on Fox and Friends. I've been there a number of times. And talk about the situation. Talk about the fact that the city of El Paso, Texas, considers disabled, 100% disabled veterans second-class citizens. As one person with the city said, you're a parasite. You don't pay any property taxes, and you expect us to give you service. I was assaulted on county property, caught on video, and when I started pushing for something to be done, the video disappeared. And when I raised hell, one of the deputies said, look, you're the wrong color to expect help out of us. Well, I played the game. I've been nice. I followed the rules. And nobody else has. So now it's a brand new ball game. I'm going to announce far and wide all the shenanigans that have gone on. And our illustrious mayor here doesn't want me to start talking. In fact, my former employer and he were bosom buddies. And some of the shenanigans I was told that he had been into. Now, the man I used to work for is in federal prison himself. And I was forbidden to come to the courthouse during the trial because I might say something that they didn't want me to say. I might mention names they didn't want mentioned because I knew who was getting the payoffs. I know who's still getting the payoffs. Well, all I wanted was my house fixed. But now, we're going to have a come to Jesus meeting. We're going to bring the Civil War back to the South. I went to the VFW today. When I was asked to join, or invited to join, they do so much for the veteran. Well, if you want to go to a good party, go to a VFW party. If you want help, don't look at them. I had the state big kahuna hang up on me when I said, would you just make a phone call to the city? No, we can't do anything like that. Why not? Aren't you there to help the veteran? Well, not on the local level, not individually. We help veterans as a group. Oh, please. And when I called the Washington, D.C. Office that does all his interactions with Congress, the man was so impressed with himself. Name was Greg, I think. He wouldn't let me finish telling him what was going on before he started telling me how to deal with it. Well, sometimes it helps to have the facts before you try to give a solution. So clearly, if you want to go to a party, join the VFW. If you want anybody to help you, you'd do better putting your money in a tin cup of somebody standing on the street corner. He could help you just as much. So I'm not a happy camper. This mold is a health hazard. And what did the city attorney tell me? Who told you mold's a health hazard? Mold's not a health hazard. Well, I assure you it is. There are people who have died in mold-infested homes, and that is what this house is. And what does the city of El Paso say? You don't pay us property taxes, we're not giving you service. All right. Got that off my chest? Well, you know, in the aftermath of World War II, ordinary German soldiers claimed they knew nothing about the Holocaust and blamed all the atrocities on the SS. However, recently declassified transcripts of an extensive British surveillance operation gives a completely different story. Now, in the chaos and carnage of war, intelligence is as vital as ammunition for the weapons. MI-19, an intelligence department of the British War Office, sent out to exploit German prisoners of war in a bugging operation of unprecedented scale. Three stately homes in the British countryside are converted into unlikely prison camps and wired for sound. According to historian Helen Fry, there were bugging devices in the lamp fittings, behind mirrors, in the fireplaces, literally every place I could put one. And hidden away were listening rooms filled with state-of-the-art recording equipment. Conversations between German and the prisoners of war were secretly recorded and transcribed. And these recordings, more than 100,000 hours, were destroyed in the interest of secrecy, and the transcripts are hidden for decades. Only recently have they been declassified and researched and cross-referenced. The bugging operation, I might add, helped save Britain in its darkest hour. Scientists wondered whether the Germans were using a secret navigation system to bomb British cities, helping to find their targets in complete darkness. The answer came when MI-19 recorded a conversation between two captured Luftwaffe pilots discussing X-Gerat, the navigation system, using radio waves. And armed with this information, British scientists jammed the radio navigation beams, which saved tens of thousands of lives during the Blitz. In 1942, victories in North Africa brought thousands of POWs to England. Two captured German generals, Wilhelm Rudolf von Thoma and Ludwig Cruwell, proved particularly useful. MI-19 provided the generals with radio, books, newspapers, in the hopes the news might provoke useful conversations. The news that the German defeated Stalingrad gave MI-19 its biggest breakthrough. You see, that loss shook the generals' confidence. To raise their spirits, von Thoma discussed for Cruel's secret weapon it might yet save the fatherland. Conversation provided a conclusive evidence that the terrifying V-2 rocket really did exist. The recording persuaded Bomber Command to carry out a risky raid on the testing site. And that bombing delayed the rocket's use for several months and bought the Allies some valuable time to try to come up with a counter. And it wasn't just operational secrets that MI-19 hoped to gather. Recordings also revealed shocking secrets about German treatment of civilians. One prisoner recounted his experiences in Russia. He said Kharkiv was a delightful town, splendid cinemas, wonderful cafes, extraordinarily lovely girls. Would simply pull them into armored cars, rape them, and throw them out again. And boy, did they curse. Well, unfortunately, these tales were only the beginning. Damning evidence of war crimes were uncovered, and there were still darker secrets to come. A Luftwaffe pilot described one incident. One SS captain said, "Would you like to come along for half an hour, get a machine gun, and let's go?" We went to some barracks and slaughtered 1,500 Jews. with 20 millimeter machine guns. It was over in a couple of seconds. Nobody thought anything about it. Well, these recordings were powerful evidence of atrocities committed, not just by Hitler's elite SS, but also by the regular German forces. As shocking as these acts were, MI-19 was about to hear the Nazis' dark secret of all. There was a private Pfaffenberger who spent 7 years at Buchenwald as a political prisoner. Eventually, he was sent to the front lines and captured by the Allies. And his account of the death camps, recorded by MI-19, is one of the earliest detailed descriptions the Allies had. So when the Allies said we knew nothing about them, that wasn't true. He said, you have no idea the amount of people killed at Buchenwald while I was there. It could easily be 30,000. As the war ended, MI-19 had 50,000 pages of damning transcript for releasing them, meant revealing their methods of espionage. Churchill wanted them released for possible war crimes trials, including the Nuremberg trials. British intelligence officials wanted to protect their methodology. In the end, the British chose to protect their new technique for the upcoming Cold War, even at the expense of bringing former Nazis to justice. Not one of the prisoners was ever convicted of a single war crime on the basis of what they said while they were imprisoned. Well, we have a caller. You're on the Ken Hutnell Show.
Hey, how you doing? I called in yesterday.
Yes, how are you?
Pretty good. Pretty serious facts you got on this show.
Well, I try.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know,
the amount of war, you know, that we got through human history is crazy.
No, that's true. And unfortunately, so often we discover that the real culprits escape because of things like MI-19 not wanting to reveal how they got the information. A crime is a crime.
Yep. Yeah. But, you know, the more I look at it, it does seem like it's a stage for people to just act out like pawns on a chessboard. You know, when the war, you know, you look at all the war and the people that die and the atrocities and, you know, I wonder myself, there really seems to be no law, because if they kill someone on the battlefield and, you know, they're in their country, they don't look at that as invading. You know, if someone goes to somebody else's country and kills them, you know, that's invading and it's killing them. And
that's right.
But if they, yeah, you know, there's circumstances where they protect themselves in their own country, and they get in, you know, they'll go to jail or something, or they'll get in trouble for defending themselves. So it's kind of like something is controlling humanity. I mean, something is, it could be humans, but there is a form of mental control that raises people to shoot other people for a gold star, a medal of honor, a certificate. The biggest part that I noticed when I was in the Army was men kill to be part of the group. And it's sad because we are discarded, you know, and every day so many vets, they say commit suicide, 22 or something. I always thought, what if 10 commit suicide a day and 12 of them are getting killed every day? Because we are the biggest threat. And any man that has been trained, you know, like, you know, you would have a skill. People will say they're a professional mechanic or a professional writer. Our skill, our only professional skill is killing.
Yeah.
And It really, I look at it, I don't feel like, I never felt like I had a country. So when I entered, I was already discarded. And that's what the military wants. They want, this is why superheroes and all of these fantasy shows always shows the kid with no parents, the orphan, and they try to
Yeah.
push that. Yep.
Well,
And,
one of the
I
things I
tell people.
discovered in training infantry soldiers, those who had never been in combat, you had to train them to not have the hesitation to pull the trigger. And some people could not accept the fact you point and shot. And part of the training program was to program you, so to speak, to point and shoot. Some folks enjoyed it too much.
Yeah, I tell people the military doesn't make anybody a killer. You have that in you to begin with. And there are men in
Or you
there that
don't.
we know. Yeah, exactly. All they do is either let you make sure, you have your way of, okay, I'm not going to kill anybody, because I'm in a unit of killers, or you they polish what you already have and just
Yep.
make you a better killer. And then the crazy part is the civilians don't see that as a problem. That's how asleep people are to say you're releasing men in society, but that have the skill and then also are traumatized, and it's really messed up. It really shows the using. But I wonder what power government has to make people just forget about it. Kind of like the Men in Black movie where they shine the neuralizer.
Yes. One of the things I found interesting, you're sent and you're trained to go into combat. You're sent into combat. And then when you come back, basically you have a few sessions with at least the people that I dealt with, you had a few sessions with psychologists to try to get you ready to reintegrate into society. Well, once you let the genie out of the bottle, it's damn hard to put it back.
It's impossible.
And most psychologists and psychiatrists I met in the military were so disassociated from reality themselves, all you had to do was tell them what you knew they wanted to hear, and they signed off, and away you went.
Even if you didn't.
Even if all you were doing was giving them lip service, they could fill out their form and everybody was happy.
It's really tough, and it's even tougher when the guys come back and they're missing parts, and you look at that and you say, wow, people. That's when I knew it from a kid from seeing corruption, but as you get older and you start to see, yes, it's a whole sham. Frank Zappa said it best: the political government is the entertainment division for the military industrial complex. It's always been military.
Well, here in El Paso, everybody's so being a military town is so, pro vet, and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna do that, and we're gonna do the other. Bull. As I've said at the top of the show, as a 100% disabled veteran, I don't pay property taxes. And they always point to that as something they've done for the veteran. What they don't tell you is the other part. The city looks at you as a parasite because they don't make money off you, but they have to spend money on you to give you services. So they don't. The veteran is literally left to fend for himself. And if you don't think that doesn't cause hard feelings on the part of the veteran, then you don't understand human nature.
Yep. Yeah. And then also a guy, some men, they'll never heal. You know, I've known of men that have, you know, shot, like how you were saying, when you point to just, you know, just point and shoot, that's how we get so much friendly
right.
fire, you know, which is basically murder. You know, it's so ridiculous. The language, the language is what really, it's disgusting to a point. I'm at that point with it. One comedian, George Carlin, pointed it out best. You know, he said it went from shell shock to like battle fatigue to, you know, post-traumatic. And then, you know, now you have like an 8-syllable word for shell shock. Just
mm-hmm.
the way you have friendly fire, collateral damage, ethnic cleansing. It's all murder, you know, and it's words hidden to say, oh, no, it's just genocide. It, you know, it wasn't really murder. It's just ethnic cleansing.
One I knew who said, I think said it best. He was a retired colonel, and he said, we train them to go kill, and we give them medals, and we slap them on the back, and we have parades. But they go home, and when they react in the way they've been taught to react, if they get wronged, now we want to kill them for doing what we trained them to do. And he was
yep.
absolutely right.
Yeah, it's true. I see now people are, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, thanks for serving and stuff like this. But only the really awakened person will understand that, you know, I was a teenager. You think I wouldn't have shot you if I had orders, you know? And I can't tell them that, but it's sad because the people are, it's such a low level beneath a slave. It's like a slave might even be way ahead of the mentality of the average American that I see, because they want, they are so zombie-like. And you know, it just, and you can't wake them up. And that's when you realize, wow, I'm in a situation. I tell people that these people that say, oh, you know, our weapons, we're going to revolt. I said, you're going to get destroyed. I said, have you ever thrown grenades or fired fully automatic weapons? You're going to get destroyed. You know, I said, if you don't find a way out of it using your mind, you're not going to have one. You know, you don't know.
Like these people that put on the internet, let's storm Area 51. They can't get all of us. Yes, they can.
Yes, they can.
I mean, the average,
yep, you
see on TV, a hand grenade is thrown, and there's a puff of smoke, and there's a little bitty hole in the ground. But have you ever seen what a hand grenade does to a person?
Oh, waffleizes them.
That's right.
Turns him into a waffle.
Have you ever seen what an M16 on full automatic does to a person?
Oh, it's horrible.
Or an M60 machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there were people on the internet really talking up, let's get 1 million people and storm Area 51 and see those aliens. Well, I've been to Area 51. There are two levels of security. There's the camo guys who hide in the bushes, and there's the group inside that does internal security. And if you get to the point you're dealing with the internal security folks, their standing orders are blow you away.
Yep.
And I tried to explain that to some folks who are planning on going, but, oh, no, they can't get all of us. We just have to be in the middle or in the back when the charge happens.
Oh.
Well, everybody else is thinking the same thing.
Ignorance. Ignorance has no prejudice. It you know, there was a general that said, he made a good point. He said, you know, We may not be able to control a million people, but we know that it's easier to kill a million people. We have the ability to kill a million people a lot easier than to control them. And that's their fail-safe. People, you know, I think about that. It's like you want to storm Area 51. You know, it's like you have to be mentally insane, partly in some way. You know, just logically thinking to say, you know, you can't even storm an armory, you know, or something that's lightly guarded, like a precinct or a National Guard unit. Yeah. Area 51. It's like, oh my goodness. And that's what they know we have to talk to, and that we will never succeed. Yeah.
People are used to seeing things on TV and thinking, well, that's not too bad. But if you've never been there and experienced the fear factor, the mud, the dirt, and hearing 99.9% of the population has never heard a bullet fired in anger. And if they did, then they wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yep. It's only military that really... They know that even the military guys that come out, most of them, like you said, are just angry, disgruntled, hurt, broken. There's really no resistance. Yeah, there is... It's so massive. That's why I know it has... It's either... humans that are incredibly more smarter, or they have a template, or they're receiving that from what it seems to be something what would be more, you know, like maybe superhuman. You know, if you just had a human that would live 300 years old, knowing that they would without barring accident, that alone could have the vision. When I look from the Industrial Revolution to now to, you know, all through the Renaissance, and I'm saying something had to foresee all of this. This wasn't planned on the fly the way they want us to think, like, oh, it just, you know, Columbus and then this. And then, no. They, you know, the maps were there, you know, and people are finding it now, you know, the Piri Reis map, the Orontes Fineus map, you know, showing us that people have mapped the world before Columbus. And, you know, then, you know, it's dangerous. I would think for the person that thinks, he should really look at the population and realize how dangerous, how with a word they can be turned against someone like zombies and come attack. And that's just the civilians, not to mention, you know, the soldiers.
Well, you know, the sad thing is, I mean, look at what is going on in Washington right now. You got a few people who have an agenda, and they've turned the entire Congress into a circus.
Yep. You know what it is, too? I think it's always been a circus. We're just now seeing it more for what it is. Like, we've reached a level where it's, you know, it's disgusting, you know, when you look at it now, because even now, if somebody said what they said in the 90s running for office, their political career would be over. So I see the progression, you know, of this whole Zappa was right. It's basically a facade. He said when they don't have the money to continue the illusion, they'll just pull back the curtain, and that's when you'll see the brick wall.
Yeah, and what, you know, we're told this is what you have to do, but we don't have to do it because we're the people in charge. Don't do as I do as I say. And that's getting very old. I mean, everyone expected Hillary Clinton to have a coronation. And when Trump, an outsider, won, nobody knew what to do about it.
And nobody woke up to the fact that I don't even think you can point to any president that ran the country, but even with previous ones, I try to talk to people and say, you really think that your vote puts this guy in office? You really think that, you know, that's the illusion they don't got to kill off their cattle. Because, I mean, they will kill people off if you storm Area 51, but they don't want to kill their farm animals off. You know, and that's, I realize that's, yeah, there's a few people, probably 1% of the population, maybe that small, that do jobs for this agenda that we don't know that they have. And like George Carlin said, he said, for the middle class, he said, the poor are there to scare the hell out of the middle class, to let you know, if you don't listen, this is where you're going. And these people that do the jobs, they don't know what they're doing it for, because it's always split up. You know, you never know who's working on what. And it's always some type of technological advancement that comes from mining and, you know, raping the earth and, you know, just really now it looks like terraforming. There's not too many people I can even mention the word chemtrail to either. You know, it's a really tough subject, but the people have to be their own scientists almost and say, look, you know, I'm in a situation where almost everybody has been mentally zombified.
Well, unfortunately, that is not too far off the mark. I mean, people, it used to be if they heard it from Walter Cronkite, they believed 100%. And now we've got CNN that has been shown to lie so often that folks are becoming very jaded when it comes to news. Years ago, when I first started playing with shortwave, I used to hear all these code stations. And I discovered I had a TRS-80 computer from Radio Shack. I don't think they make it anymore. But it had a slot you could stick a card in it. And I saw in a magazine a card that would translate those code stations. So I ordered it, stuck it in the computer, and those code stations were the overseas offices of the network sending them international news. And they would transmit it 24 to 48 hours before it appeared on our TV. And that's when I began to understand just how controlled our news is. Because what I was seeing as raw data was totally different when I heard it on TV. So you got to wonder how much of what you hear can you believe?
Yeah, they say believe none of what you hear and half of what you see.
In many cases, that's absolutely correct.
We're forced to think. And thinking is hard. That's why most people judge. It's easy. You know, Carl Jung made a good point on that. And people don't want to think. Thinking, just to sit down and read, I remember as a kid at first, you know, you're a little confused and, you know, distractions. You have to kind of train the mind. And people don't, I try to speak with people and it just reinforces the fact. One author, he said, you know, save your explanations. He said, people are going to believe what they want to believe. And every time I talk to somebody, and then, you know, an hour later, you realize, oh, man, you know, you're one of the few that shine, you know, that say, wow, this man has a mind. He thinks for himself. He's growing, you know.
This weekend at one of the cons I went to, I was a speaker. And we were talking about things that I had been there and I had done. And I had people argue with me because in their mind, I couldn't be telling the truth because, well, why has nobody ever told them? So you come to hear me speak, but you want to argue with me and tell me what you think I should be saying. I mean, it made absolutely no sense. And they paid for the opportunity to argue with me. That's what made it even more odd.
Yeah, anytime I bring up some science and bring fact, I always get that. I realize that now it's the mental disease. That's why I used, kind of the zombie reference, because it really is very akin to that when you think and you're trying to express it, their argument can be looked at as they're trying to eat the thoughts out of your head. And when you explain it to them, instead of, because we're thinking, all right, I'll explain it and maybe there's some rationality within this person, they just chew up the thoughts and spit them back in our face like a zombie. And that's when I made the analogy. I said, everywhere I look, it's sort of like a chess game. You have to get three moves ahead and then test them and say, is this person too far gone? And then at that point, then it's my mental disease, because we got to leave them alone. And I charted it, and I said, that's when I realized one in every family, only one. Well, and then
we've got a TV series starting called John Roswell, which is about crashes the government doesn't talk about. I went there. I gathered the data. I wrote the book. From the book, we did the first season. And we showed some previews of coming attractions, so to speak. And then we talked about what we discovered. And this one woman kept arguing that what we were saying couldn't be scientific because, well, it hadn't been in a peer-reviewed journal. And I kept saying, what does that have to do with the factual situation? Well, they can't be fact if it hasn't been written and peer-reviewed. I said, some of these things have never been written about. So how could they be in a peer-reviewed journal? Well, it couldn't be scientific if it hadn't been. I mean, it was like we were speaking different languages.
Yeah. One author put it as, he said, the difference in mental distance between a thinking person and a non-thinking person is greater than the distance between the non-thinking person and a chimp. And when you look at it, I said, this guy is real. He's so true. They will sabotage. You'll see the animal come out. All you have to do is pose certain questions. That's what I realized. I said, okay, I never understood as a kid, the logic of you only have a truth teller, you only have a liar, which makes the logic able to work. But I said, who would do that? A person can lie or tell the truth. You would never know. But now I realize that when you have a belief, that's when the person will always lie and the logic will work every time. And I use it to explain to people scientifically about like the theory, or I call it the religion of evolution. And I say that in every other religion, the person, when they adhere to the religion, they will always lie. Because when you ask them, well, how did it start? Can you explain it to me scientifically? And the honest ones, they will say, we don't know. But we have other evidence up here, fossils in this, and that's building the house on a lie because you don't know and you're presuming that you do. It came together in this way. And I'm still battling that. I've been producing stuff to hopefully for the holidays to be able to show a person, okay, if you don't have a scientific background, this is how you defend yourself against these assaults of not being scientific, because there is an enormous pseudo-scientific establishment akin to the Wizard of Oz, and the yellow brick road leads right to the university. Tell them you had a brain, but you had to get the degree from the Wizard of Oz. And now you think you're smarter than everybody that doesn't have it, or like the lady, her authority now is not truth. Her authority is a peer-reviewed journal.
Exactly.
So they printed in... Yeah, and that's, I said, you know what? I just, I got to accept that I'm learning. I'm kind of like, rowing the boat merrily down the stream. Because every time I think I'm trying to do something, I realize there you just have to do your work, produce, step back, and they're going to, I'm just thinking mental ways to kind of keep them at bay, because if you don't, you see so many people fall into the zombie herd, and then you lose them, and that's it. You know, so we're like survivors in now, one of those night of.
This woman was with another one who was even, in my humble opinion, goofier. There was a discussion about the theory of evolution came up. And she said, because I was talking about some of the skeletons have been found across the Midwest, 9 to 12 feet tall, 6 fingers, 6 toes, and they were wearing copper armor. And I said, clearly there's another race besides us. And, she just got all fired up. The theory of evolution says that can't be true. I said, what does that have to do with anything? She said, well, that is science. I said, no, that's a theory. Why do they call it the theory of evolution? Because it's never been proven.
Yeah. And you're being kind. You're actually being kind to her, because they get mad when I tell them it's a religion. I tell them Charles Darwin is the Pope, the Messiah is the missing link, and the church is the cathedral, is the museum of, I don't call it the Museum of Natural History. I've, researched, took the pictures there. I call it the Museum of Naturally His Story, because that's what it is. It's a big lie that I tell people I could teach you in a matter of a month. Genetics, chemistry, archaeology, logic, enough to defend yourself against any evolutionist. 12-foot skeletons with 6 fingers shatters the theory of evolution. That's why they're so afraid. Yeah, it shatters it. It like totally shatters it.
They found a city in the Grand Canyon that had a lot of skeletons of, what we would call giants, 6 fingers, 6 toes. The Smithsonian came in. I found all the clippings and all, the whole thing. And they took them back for study. And after everything died down, when people said, okay, what's the result of your study? Study about what? About those skeletons you found in the Grand Canyon. What skeletons? I mean, all the evidence vanished because it didn't fit in with how they wanted things to be.
The state religion.
Exactly.
I think the professor's name was his name is Whitney, Professor Whitney from California, and they also found skeletons, but they were human. But the problem was, during the gold rush and those days, they found them in earth that was supposedly considered to be over 10, 15 million, some 30 million years old. So the theory is trying to say, they're saying we were on all fours back, at that point. So that shatters it as well. And he went through the same thing. Professor Whitney was written back from the Smithsonian, the guy who ran it, and they totally blackballed him, just the way they did Virginia Steen McIntyre, who found Mexico finds of settlements over 100,000 years old here in the Americas.
Well, they found Homo sapien skeletons over 15 million years old, and just discounted the whole thing because, we know it couldn't be real. There had to be a mistake. Yeah. How do we know it couldn't be real?
Yeah, and doing that is not science. That's what the people don't realize. When they say, science says, I said, if you know the scientific method, archaeology itself is not a science. That it's actually a theoretical type of
it's a guessing game.
Yes, exactly. So they'll say, why do you, what do you believe? Planes don't fly, or, the cell phone. I said, that's technical science. I said, you have to understand that's what science is. the boat will float, and now you can test it. So if it doesn't work with the displacement, you know, you're seeing the signs. You can't test evolution, and that's why they made it a theory of time for billions of years. The entire geological column was made up by Lyell before Darwin. You know, because you know, you could see the strata in the Grand Canyon, you know, and naturally, I'll give it to people. You will think the lower stratas are older. It makes sense. But in studying stratigraphy and real superimposition and how things lay according to when things are flooded and silt and sedimentation, you see that we were totally wrong. Mount St. Helens was the example that taught us to say, wow, you can get layers like that in a matter of hours. How does that happen? This is unbelievable. So, yeah, and not many people, they would have came out in this conversation and tried to say, oh, well, science, like just like you said, science doesn't go with that. But then I say, do you know what science is? Do you know what the scientific method is? You know, we both have to be able to do it independently and get the same results. So
exactly. We
can both fly on an airplane.
Yeah. Yeah. When they brought the moon rocks back, you know, I had grown up being told the moon was formed from strata kicked up from the Earth as a result of asteroids. Well, if that's the case, the moon will be basically the same age as the Earth. And yet when they studied the moon rocks, they are 1 billion years on average older than the Earth. So clearly the moon didn't come from the Earth. And when that information came out after they studied the moon rocks, I saw, you know, dignified scientists, to give them the names they called themselves, actually in tears that their pet theories went out the window when faced with facts.
Their religion.
It is their religion, that's right.
Totally. And I remember one guy, I think they call it the Orpheus theory, because he, you know, the Earth gets smashed and the moon. And I said, you know, how do we really know? I said, one thing we do know that we see, the moon covers the sun exactly. We only see one side of the moon. I said, doesn't that raise a flag? You know, I said, the moon is very, yeah, suspicious, you know. And again, that the biggest weapon I see now is the person that doesn't think the conglomerate of that. That's like a witch hunt to people who think like you and I and others.
Well, you know, I was told ever since I started in education, the moon's a dead rock. They've discovered water on it. I wrote a book called Is Somebody on the Moon? 400 years of astronomer sightings of lights and movement. And don't you think lights and movement means there's somebody there?
Yeah. And
well, unfortunately,
we're
out of time again. We get these discussions going and time just flies by.
Yeah. Always flies when you're having fun.
Well, I'll be back tomorrow night.
Hey, I'll try to chime in, listen to what you're talking about. It's a great time.
Okay. Sounds good. Bye-bye. All
right. Bye.
This is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show. We'll be back tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Mountain. Till then, y'all have a great evening. Now you hear?